You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Today on The Grave Talks, the exorcism of Cindy Sauer. Cindy Sauer appeared to be enjoying a good life. She was married to a loving husband, was the mother of three girls. A far cry from the title of the book that would later depict the following years of her life, The Exorcism of Cindy Sauer. Then things suddenly took a turn for the worst. In 2009, her husband took his own life very unexpectedly. She was overcome with grief, and as many would fall into depression. It was at this time that unexplained events began occurring around her home. She very quickly concluded that these may be paranormal in nature, possibly even her deceased husband attempting to leave a message. This assumption very quickly changed as things went from paranormal to sinister and possibly demonic. She suffered horrific nightmares, terrifying images presenting themselves night after night, depicting unspeakable atrocities. And then the haunting went from an external battle to an internal war that would require an exorcism. The exorcism of Cindy Sauer was one that did not end in one cleansing. The internal battle would continue for a time to come and would never permanently go away. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we hear the personal story of the exorcism of Cindy Sauer from the woman herself, Cindy Sauer.
When I was a kid, the first interaction with anything paranormal that I can recall was when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I was sleeping in my bed. My sister and I, we shared a bed at the time. She woke me up and asked me if I saw what she saw. She was really afraid. She was upset. She pointed to the foot of the bed, and there was a chair facing the foot of the bed. It happened to be my great-grandmother's chair that she had for years. She had passed away a few months earlier, and we saw her sitting in that chair. She had the dress on that she was buried in, and she had a glow. It was almost a green sort of luminescent glow that was just around her, almost an aura. And that was my first experience that I can recall vividly.
What was
anything paranormal?
What was going through your mind as a little kid when you saw your grandma there? Just what exactly was the flow of reasoning for this happening?
It was absolute terror. When you're that young, you're trying to reconcile this. You know that she has passed away. You were at the funeral. Everything is done, and everybody's still sad. And then here she is sitting there, and I didn't really understand, the concept of ghost or spirit at that time. So I was confused, but at the same time, I was just terrified. We were both scared to death. I'm not sure if I really knew how to, how to take it in and how to accept what was going on. But I remember we just threw the covers over our heads and we stayed there until we fell asleep. And then the next morning we woke up and we're like, we did see this. We saw this, and we told our grandmother and our mom, and they actually believed us. They didn't poo-poo us or say, no, you didn't see this, it was a dream. They really did take it in, and they were, pretty supportive about it. So it was a pretty interesting experience, especially to be at such a young age.
When you share this experience with your family members, obviously it was nice to have someone to share it with, I guess. So it wasn't just a one person thing, and it could be poo-pooed as, oh, you just, had a bad dream. Did they give any support of, well, I've had similar experiences too, honey, or was it not? It sounds like they were accepting of something happened, but was there any relating that occurred at that point?
There actually was. My mother, and this sort of, I guess it runs in the family, this, intuitiveness or connection with things like this. My mother had relayed to us a dream that she had had, and I'm not sure, I don't remember the specifics about the dream, but she had a dream, and she was pregnant at the time, but she had a dream about my grandmother as well, my great-grandmother. So she described, her being there and wanting to see the baby, I guess, that she was about to have. So it was pretty interesting that she did relay that. So it wasn't, the whole situation wasn't something that was just exclusive to my sister and myself. And it was good to be able to experience that with someone, because then you're not questioning yourself. Even at a young age, you could be like, well, did I make this up or did I dream it? But knowing that there was, evidence, for us that we had experienced it and the other people experienced things, it was a little bit comforting. And kind of helped us wrap our minds around it. And it became something that was kind of normal for us, the paranormal. And back then it wasn't the paranormal. I don't think we had a name for it. It was just something that we all were comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And that was a part of our lives. So, there were different things that happened throughout. But that first experience is one that really stands out in my mind.
After you had that experience, did she ever come back again? Did you ever sense her or see her again as vividly as you did that day?
No, we did not. I didn't personally. I that was my only experience with her. And after that, I think everybody sort of, was able to move forward. And that was it as far as my great-grandmother goes. I guess it was her way of maybe saying goodbye. And it was a comforting thing, even though we were scared, obviously, it still wasn't, it didn't feel bad. It felt very benevolent, the situation, especially now being an adult and looking back on it. I know it wasn't anything threatening. And so it gives you a sense of comfort now to know that she was just there to maybe watch over us and say goodbye.
Moving forward into your childhood a little bit, you mentioned that there were other paranormal encounters, not necessarily with her, but other things that happened that made it not just such a one-time experience with something from the other side. What were some of those other experiences that you had growing up?
Well, it sort of took a little bit of a darker turn at a certain point, and things weren't necessarily as, as non-threatening. There was one experience I had when my sister and I were in the bed which again, it seems like a theme, that we were being a little bit noisy. Yeah, I think at this time I was probably around 8. We were being very noisy, so my dad would come in the room when we were being noisy, and he would close the door, which left us in pitch darkness. So we were, you know, doing our thing, and he came in, and he says, okay, I'm closing the door. You guys are being too loud, and he shuts the door. And we're still kind of giggling and, you know, having fun and doing, you know, just being girls. And I turn over on my right side away from her to try to go to sleep. And she's laying on her back behind me. And the door is, you know, over on the other side of her. So she's between the door and myself. And I was laying there. I wanted to turn around and tell her something really quickly, even though it was dark. You know, I turned to tell her something that I had thought about. And when I did and turned over, it was not her. Her face had this, again, this kind of weird glow. I mean, I could see her face even though it was dark. It had completely changed and stretched, and it wasn't anything good. It was, for lack of a better word, it looked like a monster.
Mm-hmm.
It was distorted and wrinkled, and there was this snarl, and the eyes were, you know, kind of slitted. It was frightening. It was terrible. And I started to just scream at that point. I screamed and, you know, just went nuts. My dad came in the room. My sister's shaking me, wondering what's going on. And I look at her and she's okay. Everything's fine. But that was one of the next experiences that really, really stuck with me. Years later, a friend of ours drew a picture of something that he had seen himself. And when he drew this picture out, it was actually, he was dating my sister at the time. It was the exact face that I had seen on her that night in our room. So kind of followed me throughout time. And that was a teenager when I saw this picture. So that was one of the more frightening experiences that I had.
What do you think was the cause of some of the more frightening experiences when you go beyond your grandma, but when you were having an experience like that with your sister and the fact that that gentleman drew that photo or that picture of something very similar to what you saw, also involving your sister, what do you think the source was? Was it the house? Was it a person? Was it an object? I mean, looking back in hindsight, what is your conclusion on that?
Well, looking back now and knowing some of the history that I've kind of gone through with my family and doing some research and some other things that have happened that we'll get to as well, I really think that it wasn't the house, of course. It was sort of and I don't want to say an ability, but maybe our sensitivity mm-hmm. to things. You know, I guess when there are good things, that bad things can also be attracted. You know, the energy in the house wasn't the best at times for you know, several reasons. And I think that when you're in a situation like that, that there are many things that can play into it to sort of, you know, create these situations. Doing some of the research that I've done on the property, the land itself, there are some indicators that things are a little bit different in this area as far as the land goes. And it being, you know, dating back to some pretty ancient, just maybe some native connections and also some slave connections. There was a graveyard actually in the yard that was unmarked for the most part. It had some crude headstones made out of rocks and a little bit of carving on it. But after researching, finding out that that was likely a slave burial area that was still in the yard. So, you know, there's that connection to it. And it's, when you're looking for answers, you're never going to, you know, you really can't find anything concrete when you're trying to research stuff like this. But I think it's sort of maybe an indicator on why things took a darker turn, you know, with the land and then our history, our family history as well. There are darker things that are, you know, well in the past before I was born as well that I've begun to dig up. So it might just be, create this perfect storm for things to happen. And, you know, I'm still searching for answers. So that's sort of where I'm at with that.
Sure. When you were a child, did the family even realize that some of the crude markers in the yard were, in fact, gravestones? Or what was it even looked as?
At first, we did not. But there was a certain time, you know, because there were places where it was sunken in, you know, the earth was sunken in pretty deep. And they were these perfect, you know, long areas that were big enough to, you know, to be a coffin. We didn't put two and two together at first. We were digging around in this area because it had grown into a grove of trees at that point. And, you know, digging around and pulling leaves back and looking, and we found this rectangular piece of granite, because in the area it's full of granite. There are a lot of granite outcroppings and actually a couple of big granite structures that are called mountains, that they're so big. So we turned this one piece of granite over, and it actually had engraved on it M-A-M-A. And so that's when we sort of put two and two together, and it was right on top of where one of the holes was. So after doing some research, finding out about the slaves in the area, the blacksmith shop that was over the place where my house was, and the fact that slaves were, you know, slaves' quarters were usually in that area, and they would bury their dead, of course, close by. Sure. So we sort of put two and two together for that.
It's an interesting thing with the gravestones of the slaves. A lot of folks would not even put two and two together of what some of those markings are. I've actually seen some in an antique store once. And I just thought,
really?
That's the worst thing you could possibly sell in an antique store. But I also thought they probably have no idea what that is. And I don't think many would, unless they're aware of what they, you know, somewhat historically look like. And there can be variations to them. But I think a lot of times when folks think of gravestones, their image is very much Halloween gravestones or things of that nature. And these are very nondescript, oftentimes just initials, and very, you know, very, there was no money to do it. People were not, way that they were treated, the owners weren't going to put the money into it, and they didn't have the resources to do it. So the markers can be very nondescript. Let's move forward a little bit further. As the time you got into being a younger adult, still interested in the paranormal, what did you get into at that point as far as investigating or your interest there?
I was absolutely into it. And, you know, everything as a child just fueled, you know, that want to investigate more, to dig more. And, you know, before the internet, I largely went to the library and I read a lot of books. And I was always in that one section where you had the few ghost books and the UFO books and the cryptid books. And I would sit and read these, like, just religiously. It was, yeah, I was very captivated by all of it. And when I got a little bit older, you know, again, things sort of went in a negative direction. It really started as an adult, and I did do some, you know, amateur investigating before any of the big shows came out, before Ghost Hunters or anything like that.
Sure.
You know, we would take a recorder and a digital camera, because that's when digital cameras were the big thing.
Yep.
And some friends and I would go to some places and just check it out. And it was pretty interesting. You know, it was fun. It still had that sort of air of mystery to it that I think is lost, you know, largely in modern days. It's just not what it used to be. But we did that. Never really had any sort of, you know, real major experiences. A little bit of evidence here and there, but nothing major. It wasn't until I got to, you know, to be, you know, maybe about 10 years ago is when things started to really pick up as far as activity and, you know, my experience with the paranormal goes. I would have things happen in my house, things move around, and you'd hear things, see things, you know, nothing major, just out of the corner of your eye. And it sort of became a normal thing. So I was used to it. I've been used to it my whole life, just having things happen. Didn't think anything of it. We had some tragedy that happened in 2009. My husband actually committed suicide. So, you know, that was a big blow. Mm-hmm. And it took a bit to get through it. After he did die, you know, my kids and I did experience, we started to experience things around the house. At first, you know, we would see things. We would see shadows. I would see really large shadows, sometimes go from one room to the other. My daughter actually saw my husband standing outside one day. And I went to confront whatever, because she was very scared. She was upset. She said he looked angry. And I go to confront whatever, or him, or whatever. And I have something thrown at me in the middle of the day, in the middle of the yard. And this lug nut comes flying out of nowhere and past my head and lands on the ground. And so, you know, I had that experience. Soon after that, things started to fall off the walls. We had some religious items that would fall off the walls and break. A Bible that went across the room. The pages were ripped out. Things were really starting to get active at that point. And I didn't really, you sort of are disconnected from it in a way, because we were still grieving. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking maybe, you know, I think we're all thinking, you know, maybe it's just him trying to tell us something. And as much as you don't, at that point, I wasn't in the place where I wanted to have that contact mm-hmm. at that point. But, you know, I thought if he's trying this hard and I'm just ignoring that, maybe this is what it is. And you know, we sort of dealt with it. There were some days we didn't want to go home. You know, we would leave and not want to come back because we were scared.
Sure.
And it was just myself and my kids. You know, after he died, we lost a lot of family and friends. You know, it was a very difficult situation. So we were, you know, kind of by ourselves and didn't really have a big support system at that point. So, you know, progressed and I made some new friends. There was a person that I was going to start doing some, you know, amateur investigating again, because I thought if this is going to happen, I may as well start getting back into this, you know, mm-hmm. and just kind of see where it takes me. Well, there was a house that I had been really eyeing to do this for a couple of years. And so I decided it would be a good opportunity. It was about fall. It was around this time of year, a little bit later. And it was in 2011. And I decided it might be a good time to go and check this house out. It was abandoned. Really big house. It was amazing, beautiful place. So I took this friend and we decided to go check it out during the day. And we went in and, you know, just got an idea of the layout of the house. I did have an experience when I walked in of something or someone standing at the bottom of the stairs going into the basement. And it was a very dark shadow. The basement itself was dark, but this was darker than the dark around it, you know. And we did go check this out. Didn't find anything down there. No one was there. So, you know, we got a feel for the house and we left and we decided to come back that night. And so we went back that night. I had reservations. I remember driving back to the house. There was something nagging at me that I really did not want to go into this place. I did not want to even go up the driveway, but you fight it off. You think maybe you're just, you know, you're just being scared. Your nerves are getting the better of you. It's nothing major. It'll pass. So we go up the driveway and we park and we get out, you know, just like we had the day before or earlier that day. And there's a street lamp that's in the yard by the house. And so we parked underneath that. So we get out of the car and make our way around to the back where we got in earlier that day. I immediately felt really pensive and like I did not want to be doing this. And I remember even questioning, you know, I don't know if I want to go in. I'm not sure. I thought if I felt this bad outside, I'm not sure that I really want to, you know, actually go in the house. So the further we pressed on toward the back of the house, the more uneasy I got. And I remember seeing something just darting around us, you know, from like tree to tree and bush to bush. And it was really, really rapid movement. And it seemed like that things started to pick up, like everything was sort of moving. You know, that's what it felt like to me. It felt like that there were just things moving all around. We were back there a few minutes and never made it to the back of the house where we got in. and I was just too jumpy. And I heard a car pull into the driveway. It was a gravel drive. And so we were like, okay, we're caught. We need to go back, you know, out and get out of here. But when we went around to the car, you know, our car, there was no one there. So, you know, we just stopped for a minute, and I'm still feeling really, really agitated and uneasy. And this feeling of energy picking up everywhere was just, it got more intense. And I was hearing things, and it was I was very jumpy. I was very, very edgy. And, you know, the person that was with me just kept pushing, like, well, let's do an EVP session. Let's ask what's going on. Let's see who this is. And I'm just like, I really think that, you know, it's not a good idea. I immediately got cold, started to shake. My teeth were chattering. I was really uncomfortable at this point. And this, whatever it was that was around, was just moving more rapid. The movement just seemed like it was more and more intense. And I was, you know, it was really pressing in on me. And there was one point when I hear something behind me, and I feel like there's something behind me. There was a grove of trees, you know, pretty large trees, oak trees and pecan trees behind me. And I knew there was something back there. You could hear it. It was something huge just pushing through, you know, trees. And I turn around to see face, whatever this is. And the trees that were behind us started to just twist almost. Like there was something coming through these trees, and it was big. It had to be 30 to 40 feet tall. Like this thing was massive. Mm-hmm. And it was like vapor. It was like if you're, you know, looking at a road on a hot day, the vapor that's coming up from this was there, that this thing was that big. And I looked at it, and it was coming at me. And so my first thought was to get in the car. I had to get in the car. And the car door was locked. And I kept pulling, and I was like, I need to get in. Let me in. And tried to get in, but this thing hit me before I could get in the car. And when it did, you know, I did get in. And it was just behind me, like at my shoulder, just screaming. And it wasn't a scream like a, you know, an audible scream that you hear, but it's inside my head and it's screaming. And I just sink to the floorboard to try to get away and just cover my ears. And we just get out as fast as we can. We stopped at the end of the driveway. And, you know, we sat there for a minute. And I was extremely upset at this point. And I started to get really disoriented, and I was sort of confused at this point. And I remember thinking, you know, that whatever this is, it was bad, but I couldn't make sense of things. And that's when I asked the person with me to pray, because I knew something was really wrong. And when he started to pray, is my body got really rigid and stiff, and my stomach was pushed up. I was in the seat, distorted, sort of in a like an upside down U shape, where my stomach was pressed up toward the roof of the car. I'm not sure how long I stayed that way, but after a few minutes, it released, and I just sat still. And for some reason, I just said, well, that was weird. Just the oddest thing to come out of my mouth. We left then and went, you know, down the road a little bit, but I had to get out of the car. I felt sick. So we stopped in a parking lot, and I get out of the car, and I'm still really disoriented and having a hard time making sense of anything. And I was sort of pacing back and forth, and I kept thinking I wanted to go back to this place. Like something was pulling me back to this place. And they started to ask me questions, and I kept thinking, why are they asking me these questions? What, you know, very irritated, very pissed off, basically, that they're sitting asking me stupid questions like, who am I and what's my name? And I just continued to get more agitated, and I stood against the car, and they asked me to pray. And when they asked me to pray or say Jesus, this hiss came out of me. And it was like, it was something that I could never have made, a sound I could never have made. And it was at that moment when I realized that there was something really bad inside of me. It got worse from there, that first, and I call it an attack, because I don't know what else to call it. And that first one, I'm unclear about how long it lasted, but it eventually did let go, and I was able to get control again. And I think we made it home, and it was probably daybreak when we finally got back to my house. My house was only about 15 minutes away, but the whole entire incident was a prolonged incident. And I went home thinking, my God, I had just come across, you know, like a demon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was pretty upset. It took me a few days to recover from that. It was draining emotionally and physically. I was spent, and I was a mess for quite a while. So that's when things really started to take a really negative turn.
And I want to go there. I mean, that has to be quite a realization, because you having interest in the paranormal, having read books, seen shows, all of that as to what existed at that time, you knew what someone who was possessed might theoretically act like or feel like from those things. And it's quite often, I would think, something where, oh, well, that happens to those people over there. That, you know, that you must be really into something dark to have that happen to you. But then to have that all thrust upon you, and oh my God, I'm the one in this place now, and I'm the one that's acting this way, and my friends are looking at me as I've seen or heard how people would be reacting to seeing someone who would be possibly possessed. That's got to be quite a thing to take in and process.
You are exactly right. And I think that's one of the issues that people don't realize when you're dealing with things like this, is that there is so much that goes with it. And there is a certain stigma that's attached to it, that, oh, this person is a devil worshiper, or, you know, they are into dark things. And the thing is, with my experience with the paranormal, it was something that I largely avoided. I didn't look into, you know, demonology and all this stuff. It honestly, it just terrified me.
Yeah.
You know, it scared me to death, so I avoided it. If I didn't look into it, then I wasn't in danger. It didn't exist. It wasn't going to bother me. Mm-hmm. So if it was real, if by chance it was real, then it you know, I wouldn't be affected by it. So and then people around you, you know, there's a certain amount of guilt that you carry, and it's shame for having, you know, been this way in front of people, and for people having to, you know, deal with this and having to live with it as well. It's a very difficult burden to carry that people don't consider, the shunning and you know, the disbelief, because it's hard to believe. It's a hard thing to swallow, and people don't want to accept it, largely out of fear.
Yeah.
And then secondly, because it's like, oh, it's movies, it's TV, it's not real, you know? And so there's even in the field today, you know, everybody's a demon expert. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what to do, but nobody really knows what to do.
No.
And people want to think, oh, that, you know, that you can, that they're familiars, or there's certain things that I don't agree, because I have had to be attached to these things. And so it's a completely different thing when it's real. And, you know, I never thought that would happen. It's something, who plans that? Who thinks? Who even can concede that that's going to happen? You can't. And then when it does, what do? You know, there's a huge gap between, you know, like this happening and what the heck do you do after? Like, how do you deal with it? And as big as the field has gotten, and as much as people want to think that they have answers, it's just not. It's very lacking in this situation. There really aren't answers for it. But those are big things.
Yeah.
You know, the people around you and how it's dealt with. It's huge.
Very uncharted territory for even the so-called experts out there. How did you continue into that territory? What happened after that incident?
Well, when it happened, I was really hanging on the hope that it was just an isolated incident, that I had gone to this place and stirred something up, and that, you know, despite the things that had happened at the house, you know, I was still largely in denial about anything that had happened, you know, at my home. And I just was praying, okay, look, this is just isolated. It happened. It's terrible. It was a horrible experience. I'm going to move past it, and I'm going to pick myself up and just kind of forget it, and things are going to be okay. And so, you know, that's where my mindset was immediately after, you know, as soon as I had a few days to recover, because like I said, it took a while. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of following that train of thought. And then, I saw a few weeks later that it was not an isolated incident, and that it was at my home. And there was a shadow, a thing outside one night, and it came at me very much like it did at the other house. It wasn't as big, it was different, but it did come at me and knocked me down. And that's when I realized that something had maybe followed me. You know, I still was in denial about what was happening. I still did not want this to be. I still could not accept it. So I thought, okay, something followed me from this house to my house. So the you know, your thought process changes. You know, it's not an isolated incident, but I'm going to deal with this the best I can. And so, you know, I prayed a lot. I continued to get more depressed. I was upset. And, I'm still a mother with kids I've got to take care of. So you're doing this balance between, you know, dealing with this emotionally, and then, you know, still being a mom, mm-hmm. still having to work, still, you know, doing everything that you have to do. And, it just continued. Things started to progress. They were at first, a lot of external things happened, shadows, things going by windows, things moving, cabinets open and closing, the dryer door opening and shutting rapidly back and forth, just several times. Things going missing. Again, religious items. They were always a target. I started to get where I would put things away. Religious items, just put them away because they were going to get destroyed. Mm-hmm. I would get physically grabbed, pretty forcefully. I got scratched, and yet I still was at the place where I was like, this is not happening. You know, that this thing has followed me and we're going to get rid of this. But it turned from external to internal pretty quickly. And when I say internal, I mean hearing these things speak to me, and thinking things that were not my thoughts. Saying things that I didn't, you know, as cliche as it sounds, that were a different language, and having thoughts that about people, what they were thinking. You know, I would tell people to stop praying. I get very angry, like, don't pray. And they're like, we're not praying. They're not speaking. They're not, you're saying anything, but they were praying. They were praying silently, and it would make me very angry, but I would know it. They would tell me things like, this person hates you. They're trying to ruin you and destroy you. You need to distance yourself from them, or this, you know, just these things would start to happen. At that point, I still didn't know what these things were, what these voices were, what these thoughts were. I knew it was bad. There were times that I would really want to hurt people. And I would have these vivid images in my head of, you know, doing these things. I had never acted on them. You know, I'm just naturally, I've never been a violent person. I've never, I'm very empathic. So You know, I'm just gentle. That's just all how I've always been. So this was very foreign to me to have these thoughts. And this all happened within weeks. It progressed that quickly. I started to hear, I would lay in bed at night, hear knocking and scratching on the inside of my walls. On the ceiling, I would hear it. I would hear growls and hisses coming from the corners of my room. And it was just absolutely terrifying. You know, I couldn't sleep. It was hard to sleep. I would stay awake and just be petrified because I was so scared. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't see these things, but they were there. And they just got closer and more prevalent, and they got into me more and more and would take over more often. I had more attacks. I had one where I actually punched myself in the face. I had several just that weren't, you know, weren't overwhelming attacks, but they would take over, and I would be doing like normal chores, but it wouldn't be me. It was not me, and my body movements would change, just the way that I moved, the way that my facial expressions were very different, and my eyes would change, and I could feel it, but there was nothing I could do. I would just be pushed back, sort of, inside myself. And I wasn't able to do anything. I couldn't reach out and tell anybody to help me because there was nothing I could do. And so it continued to spiral like this. There were a few people who knew what was happening that, you know, I confided in that would be around that were helpful. But for the most part, you know, you keep it to yourself because what you don't know what's going on. So how do you tell people what's going on?
That wraps up part one of our interview with Cindy Sauer about her haunting story. In part two of our interview with Cindy Sauer, we discuss some of the darker family chapters that she learned about on her journey of healing. We also hear in-depth accounts of what it was like to have a demonic force exercised out of her, and the struggle to keep the force away for good. To listen to part two of our interview, become a Gravekeeper through our website at thegravetalks.com or through patreon.com/thegravetalks. For $5 a month, you'll have access to every episode of our show, commercial-free, months before they go public. Access to every exclusive Part 2 interview that will always be for Gravekeepers only. Access to submit questions to upcoming guests of the show. Plus, you'll have the good feeling of knowing that you're keeping the show on the air. We could not do it without your support. Sign up to be a Gravekeeper at patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time. For The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20. This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20. This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20. This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20. This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.